So there's several people here tonight for the first time, right? You're here. But the three of you have been here to the other sessions, all of them? You've been to all five? You missed one, okay. And how about you? You missed the first one? Okay, very good. Well, I do not like to punish the people who are on time, so we'll just go ahead and get started. There may or may not be other people coming in. And that way, if we get started now, that means maybe we'll end early or at least on time. So my name again is Elise Strievel, and I'm the outreach coordinator for the Kadampa Center. So if you have any questions at any time, never hesitate to email me at this email address. And if you forget it or lose it, just go to our website and look under About Us and our management team, and you'll see my picture there with my name and this email address. So, as always, we're going to start with setting our intention. That's very important. And our intention is that we deliberately put time and energy aside to come here, have busy days, places to go, but we all feel that developing ourselves, getting to know ourselves, is so important that we're willing to do that. So let's set the intention to have open minds and open hearts and try to hear something, at least some little thing, that will help us accomplish our goal. But to feel encouraged that we are traveling in the right direction. So we're going to start with meditation, with a review. We're going to review a few basic meditation techniques, review some of the basic Buddhist terms. We started that last week and there was one or two we didn't get to, so we'll just go over that. And then we're going to use some prayers and passages as a review of the concepts that we've learned over the last 4 weeks and discuss how these can be used as tools for yourself. And I do have printouts that I will give to you. Okay. All right. Meditation. Why do we meditate? Is it because we're told we should? Not in the Buddhist philosophy. Nowhere will you find that you must meditate. They only say that if you do, you will benefit, but it's up to you. Meditation can mean something different to different people. In this Buddhist tradition, meditation comes from the word gom, which means to become familiar with. And what we want to become familiar with is our minds. And the ultimate goal of meditation, says Geshe-la, our resident teacher, is to have a peaceful mind. When our minds are peaceful, we are happy, we are flexible. So that's the ultimate goal. So how do we make our minds peaceful with meditation? Well, first we need to have our bodies in a comfortable position so that we can relax and let go of our bodies. Because if our bodies are uncomfortable, our mind is going to be uncomfortable. So in this tradition, they teach the 7-point posture, which is a way that has been used over the thousands of years as a good way to have your body in a position to be relaxed. Your feet, if you're in a chair, should be flat on the floor. If your legs are short, they should be up on a cushion so you're not straining to reach the floor. Or you can have your legs crossed in the way that's most comfortable to you. Most importantly, your back needs to be straight. You can need to picture the vertebrae of your spine stacked one on the other. And this is really essential because we want to put our bodies in a position where our skeleton will be supporting itself so that you can ultimately relax all of your muscles and not worry about it and really turn your mind inward and not be distracted. It's usually helpful to be sitting on the edge of a cushion so your hips are tilted. And it's very difficult to do that on a straight Western chair. Next, your arms should be, well, your hands should be about at your abdomen, just below your navel, and your arms out a little bit so that air can pass through under your arms. In our tradition, we cup the right hand into the left with thumbs touching. Other traditions, you put their hands in different places and that's fine, but in our tradition we do this, form a basket to receive the teachings. Our head is tilted very slightly. Actually, it might feel like you're holding it straight up, but it should be tilted very slightly forward, not too far forward, otherwise after a while gravity will pull you frontward and make it tempting to go to sleep. And if you're tilted too far back, it will be uncomfortable and they say you'll be hyper alert. So try to have your head just pretty straight up, just slightly tilted forward. Your eyes should be ideally slightly open to let in a little light so you're not tempted to fall asleep. But it's hard for beginners to do that, so it's okay if they're lightly closed. Your mouth should be lightly closed, and your tongue should be on the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth, and that prevents your mouth from drying out. So that's the first step, to get your body in the right position. Do you have to be sitting this way? Of course not. But this is a way that has been proven over the centuries to work. But if something else works better for you, that's perfectly all right. So now that we have our bodies in a good position, the next thing we want to do is to try to focus our minds. Our minds in the West are what they call the monkey mind, jumping from one thought to another, especially with all the media and everything swirling around us, our busy days. So we need to bring our mind back home. So we start with the body scan. Well, first we bring our minds in. We think how we drove in, pulled our car in the parking lot, got out, came into the building. Okay, and now we are in this building. We are sitting in our chair or on the floor. We feel how our body is making contact with the chair or the floor. We feel our back nice and straight, rising up out of there. Our arms comfortably on our lap and our sides. And we're here in this place at this time. Now that we've pulled our body and mind together into this place, we're going to focus further by doing the counting meditation. In this meditation, we count slowly to 10 on the inhale. You start by exhaling, then breathe in 1, and count on the inhale to 10, really focusing on each breath. If you find your mind has wandered, start over from 1. Why do we do meditation? Count to 10? The same reason why when you're angry or distracted, you should count to 10, because counting helps to bring your mind to a neutral place. And from a neutral place, it's easier to redirect it to a positive place. So we'll take time to count to 10, starting with 1. Some people ask, when should I meditate? Geshe-la recommends that we do it first thing in the morning because it really sets the tone for the day, gives you a nice, peaceful foundation on which to build your thoughts and your actions throughout the day. How long should we meditate for? Geshe-la says, for whatever amount of time that you're comfortable with. Comfortable with 3 minutes? That's perfectly fine. He said, when you start feeling uncomfortable, when you start thinking, oh gosh, when is that dinger going to ring? It's time to get up. You should never feel like it's a chore to sit and meditate. So, counting to the breaths helps to bring our mind into focus, helps us to concentrate on one thing at a time more than before. And most people think that this is what meditation is, that this is the end point, the purpose. In our tradition, this is the beginning. In the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, the point of meditating is to bring your mind into a focus so that you can concentrate on one thought at a time and then use that skill to become familiar with positive things to put in your mind. Geshe-la suggests that if you're a beginning meditator that you could write down a list of qualities that you wish to achieve or change, such as kindness, for example. He says, write that word down on a paper. Then when you focus, look at that word. It's a positive word that you bring into your mind and you think about what it means. When have you been kind before? How did it feel? How did you do it? When you've been unkind, how did that feel? And what could you have done differently? What can you do today to be a kind person? And those are examples of the analysis, using your mental focus to analyze thoughts. If you choose to continue to study the Buddhist philosophy, there are many concepts and ideas that you can use in this time to become familiar with. Because everything about Buddhism is to believe it only because you've proven it to yourself. And this is a good time to start doing that. Up here, you'll see 9 round breathing. This is a meditation that you can do if you find yourself just perseverating on some thought that you don't want to have in your head. It can be anything from a stupid song, or more commonly, it'll be something that happened to you, somebody cut you off in traffic, or you got angry at somebody for doing something, and it just won't leave your mind, and you just want it, you want it to go away. You want to be able to be clear and keep moving on. So Geshe-la says, the reason that happens, the reason thoughts get stuck in our head, is because in our body there are over 72,000 channels of energy flowing throughout our body all the time. They never stop, always going. And our minds are always generating thoughts, and thoughts are energy. And this energy is swirling around through all these 72,000 channels. Well, when you have some negative thoughts, that negative energy actually gets caught in one of those channels, blocks it. And he says that is why we feel those negative thoughts just blocking, getting stuck. So one way that you can try to push that blockage through is this technique called 9-round breathing. You can choose to believe it or not, but it's worth trying. It's amazing how it can work if you practice it. And the way 9-round breathing works is you take the ring finger of both your hands. Okay, we're going to use the ring fingers. Start with the ring finger of your left hand, and you're going to block your left nostril. Breathe in through the right. Then put the finger on the other side. Breathe out through the left. We're going to be doing that 3 times. Then you're going to use the ring finger of the right hand and do the reverse. Block the right nostril. Breathe in through the left. And block the other side, breathe out through the right. You'll do that 3 times. And then you'll breathe through both nostrils 3 times for a total of 9. Let's go ahead and start. Are there any questions? Yes. Geshe-la always recommends blowing your nose and trying to unstick, but it can definitely be difficult. The question was, what happens if your nose is blocked up, if you have a cold or something? And that can be difficult. Yeah, so just have to try to work through that. Wait till your cold's over, your allergies are over. Yeah, I don't really know. That's a good question, though. Any other questions? Okay. We'll move on. Here's a little cartoon that says, my name is John, and I haven't had a think for 36 days. Meditators Anonymous. Okay, so review. So what is Buddhism? When you're studying Buddhism, you're studying yourself, the nature of your body, speech, and mind, with the main emphasis being on the nature of your mind and how it works in everyday life. It's simple and practical in that it explains logically how happiness, peace, and satisfaction comes from the mind and not from a supernatural being in whom you have to believe. And did anybody else just notice that spelling mistake? Okay, there's an emphasis on the faith of conviction. As a review, in Buddhism, there's three kinds of faith. The first is the kind of faith an innate kind of faith, where, for example, if you're in a beautiful cathedral or out and looking at the stars, you just have this sense of something outside yourself. You just believe something in the greatness of something, okay? That's the first kind of a belief, kind of nonspecific. The second kind of belief is you believe something because somebody told you so, that at times can be appropriate. In Buddhism, that is only appropriate if you believe something that someone is telling you and you have checked out that person and you know that person to be qualified to be saying what he or she is saying. You don't just believe just anybody. But really, the most important kind of faith in Buddhism is the third kind, which is the faith of conviction. You believe something because you have tested it out, you've thought about it, and you know it to be true for yourself. And that's what Buddhism really emphasizes. So Buddhism is a technique to understand why you think and behave the way you do in order to understand how and why you should change or keep qualities. It's a way to be ethical and happy based on knowledge and wisdom so you can feel solid and have equanimity regardless of what's going on around you. So, for example, if you feel angry a lot or impatient, how are you going to fix that? Well, in Buddhism, we believe that what you need to do is really stop and study your mind and think, why am I impatient? What causes me to be impatient? What situations have I been impatient in? What does that tell me about it? What are some techniques I can do to change that? You really have to study it. Like I told some in a previous class, how Venerable Rabina says, if you're a child and your mother tells you not to touch the stove because it's hot, you don't do it because she told you to, right? And you trust your mother. You know she's an authority in your life and she knows what she's talking about. If you're 20 years old and you're still not touching the hot stove because your mother told you not to, that's no longer appropriate. It's really important that you figure it out for yourself. Why are you not touching that hot stove? What are the dangers involved? So you need to figure it out for yourself. The same thing with not stealing, not lying, not being jealous. Why are those things wrong or bad? Who decided that? Did somebody in some other faith systems, it's because some higher power says that they are wrong or bad. And that if you do those things, perhaps you are displeasing or causing harm to this higher power. Now, that could be completely true. We don't know which system of belief really is true or right. But the philosophy of Buddhists, the Buddhist view, is just different. So if another viewpoint is helping you to be kind, not jealous, ethical, if that is helping you, then by all means continue with that viewpoint. But if that isn't working with you, for you, the Buddhist viewpoint is different. And in the Buddhist viewpoint, when you do those things, when you participate in jealousy, anger, stealing, all these negative emotions. They are called the negative emotions because they disturb your mind. How do you know they're disturbing your mind? I don't know of anybody who ever said something like, oh, I was really jealous and it felt great. Okay, we all know that we feel unsettled, uncomfortable when we participate in these things that are considered negative emotions, things that some people would call unethical or sins or crimes or whatever, okay? We know that they make us unhappy, and that's the place to start. If you are feeling unhappy, then that's what you need to change, and you need to think about it. What is making you unhappy? What do you need to change? And how do you change it? We're going to have some suggestions later on here. All right. So next we're going to review some terms and concepts in Buddhism that we started reviewing in the last class, didn't get finished doing. And the reason I wanted to bring up these terms and concepts is because when you talk to people about Buddhism and you read books about Buddhism, you're going to encounter these terms often. And you certainly are not going to get an adequate understanding of them in this very brief class, but I just wanted to show them to you and maybe start helping you understand what they mean. And the first important concept is that of interdependence. Nothing and no sentient being can exist independent of others. And that's really easy to prove. Like, we're sitting in this room. Could we be sitting in a chair if somebody didn't make that chair and deliver it and somebody buy it and bring it here? Our clothes? I mean, it's just very, very easy to, even if you're in the middle of, you know, in a cave on a mountain, you exist because of the goodness of others. Because eventually you have to have at least some food or something that someone would bring you. No one would be alive. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for our mothers giving us birth. Okay? So there's every kind of example of interdependence. Impermanence. The moment things and events come into existence, their disintegration has already begun. Everything is changing. Even our physical bodies that we have right now, not a single cell is the original cell that was there 10 years ago. All right? We are changing all of the time. Everything is changing. Decay. You know, we've all seen pictures of abandoned cities, of abandoned cars. They're just sitting there. They're changing all the time. Everything is changing. Dependent arising. Self and things come into existence in dependence on causes and conditions, their parts, and the mind labeling them. All right. This chair is dependent on somebody making fabric and weaving the fabric and dyeing the fabric and cutting it and sewing it and somebody else making the metal. It's made up of component parts. It's dependent on people deciding to do it, having the materials available, putting them together, delivering them. Everything is made up of different things. Okay. Scott, if you have any ideas or want to add something, please don't hesitate to. Now, these terms, I don't feel like I'm doing a really good job explaining them right now, but later on, we're going to have another opportunity to revisit these terms in a way that you can use in your everyday life. Okay. Some other important terms, love, loving kindness. It's the wish that all sentient beings be happy. And what is a sentient being? In Buddhism, it comes from the word sentient, which means mind possessor. So every living creature that has a mind, and in Buddhism we believe it's all the way down to the insects, so it's a broad range. And this might include even some beings that we cannot see, perhaps some beings in other galaxies or planets, we don't know. But for sure, it's all, even if we take the premise that it's all the sentient beings on this planet and our experience, that is even sufficient. Compassion is the wish that all sentient beings be free from suffering. And equanimity is being able to have those above wishes for all sentient beings equally, whether it's your mother or some terrible dictator halfway around the world. Equanimity means that you can wish all of them to be happy and to not suffer. It's sometimes difficult to think that we should wish happiness on somebody who's really harming other people, isn't it? But you know, if you could wish them happiness enough that they would achieve that happiness, do you think that if they were happy they would be doing those terrible things? So that's a really good reason right there to try and have love and compassion toward everybody. Okay, some other important terms and concepts in Buddhism, also called the three principal aspects of the path. Nice fancy term. Renunciation, it's the first step on the path. And it's a heartfelt wish to be free from the sufferings of cyclic existence. It means we're tired of repeating a life that has complications. No matter how wonderful our life might be, we might have a nice house, a nice spouse or family, good job. Still, everybody has a life with some kind of complications. And it means that we're really tired of having a life with complications, big or small. And we are willing to put in our effort and time into studying ways of improving our mind so we get rid of these complications and not have to repeat them over and over again. Bodhicitta. A bodhisattva is somebody who has bodhicitta. It's an altruistic intention to become enlightened for the sake of helping all others to become so. In previous classes, we've talked about the Theravada and the Mahayana sects of Buddhism. In the Theravada tradition, the goal is to become enlightened for our own sake. Okay, it's sort of like be the change. Okay. Our goal is to enlighten ourselves with the understanding or belief that if everybody, each individual sentient being, took responsibility even just for their own enlightenment, then everybody would eventually get enlightened, right? And the world would be a really wonderful place. So it's just one way of thinking. In the Mahayana tradition, which Tibetan Buddhism is in the Mahayana tradition, just a little bit different mindset. Our goal is a little bit more altruistic. Our goal is to become enlightened in order that we can help others to achieve enlightenment. And it's sort of a premise like His Holiness says, if you want to be happy, be kind to others. If you want others to be happy, be kind to others. In either case, it's always good to be kind to others. So it's not better than, it's just different from the other tradition. And somebody who is in the Mahayana tradition and chooses that path is called a bodhisattva, and he tries to achieve bodhicitta. Next is emptiness, and I kind of hesitated to even bring up this term because it's a lollapalooza, okay? It's a very difficult term to understand, but it's so prevalent and people talk about it so much. I wanted to bring it up because the word emptiness, I cannot claim to really understand it because it's a huge, difficult, complex subject. But to the extent that I understand it, I wanted to try. Because I think it's a very unfortunate translation. It's one of those Buddhist words that suffered in the translation. Okay? So, emptiness is also called the right view. Let me show you an example of what it is not. There's nothing on. Excellent. Let's watch that. Okay, there's a lot of jokes about the Buddhist view of emptiness, nothingness, okay? And that's why I even thought about trying to bring up this topic, because it is not that. I've read a short story one time about this guy and his girlfriend went to a diner, and they're sitting in the diner, and she's all agitated, and she says, "You know what makes me happy?" He says, "What?" She says, "Nothing." And he says, "Wow, that's what makes me happy too." So, you know, it's just a term that seems to be really, really misunderstood. And let me try and explain it a little tiny bit. It's called the wisdom of emptiness. It is the absence of all false ideas about how things exist, specifically the lack of the apparent independent self-existence of phenomena. You know what it is now? Okay, it is not nihilism. It does not deny that things exist. Emptiness does not say, "We don't really exist. That chair doesn't really exist. The table doesn't exist." That's not what it is. What it is trying to understand that things are not existent in themselves. This table didn't suddenly, out of nothing, just appear and be a table. It is made up of component parts. Like we talked about before, dependence, interdependence. Everything works together. Okay? When we think of another way of thinking about emptiness is about self. You know, we each think our self is like a self-contained entity, okay? Like we are this entity that just always was, or at least since birth, and just we're like this little container of personality and qualities that just kind of moves through life until you die, and then you decide whether or not something happens after that. But then you stop and say, well, what is self? Okay, what am I? When I say I, what do I mean? Okay, well, maybe I mean, I am the collection of qualities that was born in Connecticut and then went to different schools and then I did this and that and then here I am and I'm still this collection. But then you think, okay, say you did something that was really awful, and you think to yourself, "Oh, I'm sure not, I'm just disgusted with myself," or "I'm really proud of myself." Well, who's the I that is disgusted with the what self, or the proud of the, like, what? Who's the I and the self? You see, so. That's what emptiness means. It means to look at what things really are. So if myself is here, when did I start being a self? Was it the moment of conception? Was it before that? Was it after? Like, when did self start and when is it going to end? If this is myself, when would I stop being a self? What if I lost both my legs and both my arms? Would I still be myself? Remember Christopher Reeve, the guy who played Superman. He wrote a book called Still Me, even though none of his body was really working, he still was himself. So that the in Buddhism they say that this misunderstanding of self and how things really are is what is at the root of many of our complications and misunderstandings, because we don't even know what self is. Yet then we start saying, well, I want this. Well, who's the I that wants it? Or, this is mine. Well, why is it mine if I don't even know what I is? And yours. So then we start getting the me and mine, and it's not yours, and you know, so it's really very complicated. But that's, I know I'm not doing a very good job of really explaining what emptiness means, because like I said, it's very difficult, but I just wanted you to know that it doesn't mean nihilism, and it's just trying to think about how things really are. Another very everyday example would be to say, well, you know, I've been working really, really hard to get this really perfect car, and you get the perfect car, and then first day out, somebody smashes it, and you get really upset because it's the perfect car and it got smashed. But really, what is that? It's just a vehicle. It's just a collection of metal put together. So if you start really thinking about how things really are, maybe it will help you to disengage a little bit and be a little more even and not getting as upset when things don't go the way you think that they should, or if you can really study about what's really going on and think about all the components that are involved, and it's not just that narrow view of what you think you're seeing or what you think is happening. It's really a lot more all around it. It's a whole collection of causes and conditions. Okay? So I hope that helps you a little bit, and I hope I haven't misled anybody. Okay. All right, so now we're going to get on to briefly about prayer, because I'm going to be handing out some prayers and anecdotes and things that can be helpful. So what is prayer? Almost everybody prays. Like Calvin and Hobbes says, nobody is an atheist at exam time, okay? Everybody finds it very appropriate in some way or form, regardless of what you call it, to pray at some time for many different reasons. So what is it? And who do the Buddhists pray to if we don't believe in a creator or a supreme being? Because in general, we have, and most people think that we pray to somebody in hopes that some power or some higher being can make changes for us, right? But if the Buddhists do not believe in a higher power, we believe in the power of our own energy and that of others around us. So who do we pray to? Okay, so prayer can be a wish, an aspiration, an appeal for support. It's always something that helps your mind. Okay, let's hope that there's nobody praying for something that's disturbing your mind, right? So this includes mantras. Some people find mantras to be very helpful for different reasons. Okay. And who do Buddhists pray to? In a way, you're praying to yourself, your higher self, setting aspirations and reinforcing your positive intentions. By praying that you pass the exam, by praying that you be a better person or that you can resist temptation, you're putting out that aspiration there and focusing your mind and your energy on it, right? So you're helping yourself by focusing on that. It can also be an appeal to others, seen and unseen, for their example and support, remembering that you are the only one that can change yourself. So you can ask your friend to help you stay on your diet, right? You can ask your friend to help you to not have candy around when you come over her house, or you can ask your friend to remind you to go and buy healthy food. You can ask your friend to help you stay on your diet in many different ways, but your friend cannot do the diet for you, right? So in Buddhism, we believe that there are beings, sentient beings that we see, but we also believe there are some that are unseen, maybe what in other traditions might be called saints or spirit beings or whatever. Okay, so we appeal to those beings to support us, to inspire us, or whatever we need. For example, you can look at the qualities of the Buddha or other holy beings as qualities you aspire to. You can review examples of the lives of others as a role model for your own behavior. And they don't need to be a Buddhist. You don't need to be a Buddhist, okay? For example, Mother Teresa, Pope Francis, or Nelson Mandela, or anybody in your life, past or present. For example, Saint Francis of Assisi is a tremendous role model for his compassion toward animals, right? Now, surely that was not his only good quality. I'm sure he was also honest, kind of people, and humble, and had all these other qualities. But something about him, that quality stood out more than others. And people of his time, and for all time after him, looked toward him as an inspiration of kindness to animals. Some of the Buddhas, like the thousand-armed Chenrezig. This picture at the top looks like a fan, but it's really in a depiction of Buddha with a thousand arms, because he just wanted to embrace everybody and show everybody compassion. So it's just an artistic rendering of his immense compassion. And when we want to be inspired to have compassion, we can look at that and say, wow, I wish I had that much compassion. So you can aspire in a prayer for that. Okay. And prayer is a self-help tool. There's important uses of formal prayers. Sometimes we just don't have the right words ourselves, do we? Sometimes it's really helpful to see the words somebody else has written for you. And it can be used as a meditation tool to guide us through the learning process or understanding the Dharma. And it can be used as a self-help meditation to help our minds through difficult times. And here are some examples. So, you pass some, and could you get some up? There's plenty, so if someone needs an extra one, go ahead and take it. So I really love this part of this last class, because these prayers and excerpts that you have are things that I chose because over the 12 years that I've been coming to Kadampa Center, these have really helped and inspired me more than I can ever imagine, and I hope that they can do the same for you. And the first is the Four Immeasurables. When I first came to the Kadampa Center 12 years ago, I had gone through years of exploring just about every kind of religion, philosophy, belief system, searching for something that I felt could explain why things are the way they are. How can I be a less anxious, worried person? How can I be a better person? So what I found in one faith system to another, it wasn't quite right, but So I thought, well, let me try and extract the essence. The truth is in the essence of all these different faiths. And one thing they all had in common, they all talked about the golden rule, love one another, right? Have compassion for others. They all said that. They all gave examples of some saints that showed love, and Jesus showed love and having compassion. But nobody could define what it was. And no matter how many times you see the example, or for myself, if I didn't understand what that meant, like, what does love really mean? How can I love my husband and love someone on the other side of the earth? Like, what does it mean? And the first thing when I came into the Kadampa Center and saw this basic prayer of the four immeasurables, explained it. The first sentence is, may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. And that is the definition of love. And finally, it's like, oh, you know what? I can wish that my husband have happiness and the causes of happiness. I can wish that Putin have happiness and the causes of happiness. This is a definition that I can apply, so now I can really understand what love means. So if I know what it means, then maybe I can work harder to know how to do it. So then the part about Buddhism is then you start deconstructing this and really understanding what it means. So may all sentient beings have happiness. Well, what does happiness mean? Well, when are we happy? We are happy when we have positive minds, right? And that's what we study in Buddhism, of how to have a happy, peaceful mind. Well, how do you have a happy, peaceful mind? Well, you take out what's negative. Well, what's negative? Well, then we study about the negative emotions of anger, jealousy, pride, all of those things. Then you study, well, what is anger? What is jealousy? And it's like that. That's what Buddhism is all about, right? But it gives you something to start with. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. It's a definition of compassion. It's a little different from it's similar to but different from wanting them to be happy, right? You don't want them to suffer. Well, what does suffering mean? Okay, and then you deconstruct that and think about it. And then great love, may all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. You want them to find that wonderful sweet spot of being happy and not suffering and just stay there always. That's that altruistic wish of bodhicitta, that great love. And then you want them all to abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And that word, that phrase, attachment for friends, sometimes gets a little misunderstood. It just means that if you're around people and this person, you know them really well, and that other person, you don't know them very well, and, you know, you're going to wish this one a little more happiness than that one because because they're closer to you. No, we're working to achieve that spot where, yes, we want your friend to be perfectly happy and free from suffering, but we also want that other person we don't know to be perfectly happy and free from suffering. That takes a lot of work, may take many lifetimes to achieve, but that's our goal. Any questions about this? All right, so the next one. Now, there's a lot to study about Buddha. Are you cold? Mm-hmm. Scott, do you know how to turn them back up, please? Thank you. I put it down to 72, so maybe back to 74. Thank you. In Buddhism, there's so much, it's vast, right? Just in these five classes, we've covered so many different terms and, you know, and it's like, yeah, this is a different way of thinking about life, okay? So, say you are dissatisfied and you want to use Buddhism as a different, to think differently, okay, to change your life, well, where do you start? Well, there is a body of knowledge within Buddhism called the Lam Rim. Lam Rim means the graduated path, and it is essentially a curriculum. And okay, if you want to change your thinking, first you think this, then that, then that, and then that, okay? Then so it builds up your knowledge, your understanding gradually, so you can understand more difficult and deeper topics eventually over the years and years if you're a conscientious student, okay? So this Lam Rim was first developed by Lama Atisha back in thousand years ago, a long time ago. And this prayer, the foundation of all good qualities, is sort of like the cheat sheet of it. You know, it's an outline that you can use that mirrors what the Lam Rim is. And here we only have four verses out of, like, there's like 14 or 16. It's a long, long, long prayer. But we're just going to review the first few verses because those are the first things that you would use to put yourself on this path of learning these different, the Buddhist concepts from the bottom up. And the first couple of verses are, the foundation of all good qualities is the kind and venerable guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely on him with great respect. So what does that mean? It means the very first thing you do is look for a good teacher, because this is a different way of thinking. Okay, it's something that we all need to learn. We need to learn from someone who knows what they're talking about. So it means that the foundation is to find a really good teacher, someone that we can rely on for guidance. Now, not all of us are fortunate enough to be able to come and listen to get teachings from our resident Geshe, who is certainly a very qualified teacher. And there's many reasons why he is qualified. But say you can't come here to Kadampa Center and get lessons from Kadampa, from Geshe Gelug. Well, who could you turn to be a reliable teacher of Buddhism? There's no doubt that His Holiness the Dalai Lama is a very highly qualified teacher, and his teachings are very readily available and are really good for most Western minds because he's got translators that help to put the teachings into a way that Westerners can read. So you know that if you pick up a book by the Dalai Lama to learn about Buddhism, you're learning the right stuff. Now, there might be, Joe Smith might have written a book about Buddhism, and he may be correct, but you can't be sure. Okay? So it's really important, if you're going to make the effort to learn about the concepts of Buddhism, that you get it from the right source. In Buddhism, they say, you take your time to really check out your teachers. They say even check them, what, for like 13 years. This is not a casual thing. You know, you really need to be sure that you, if you're going to be learning something that you're going to take as your life, that it's authentic and correct. And that's what this means. And then, if you find a good teacher, and then you rely on that person for the information, okay? Once you really feel that person is authentic, after you've checked them out thoroughly, and he says something you don't like, you'll say, everything about him is right except that thing. You know, I'm more right on that one. No, if he's really an authentic teacher that you've checked out, then you really need to think about what he's saying, or she, and work with them, okay? All right, the next one. After you've found and checked out a really good teacher, the next thing you do is think about this thing that we've talked about in a previous class. Understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once is greatly meaningful and is difficult to find again. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly, day and night, takes its essence. This is the concept of a precious human life that we talked about previously, and it's one of the essential foundations of Buddhism, to recognize that our life has great value. To be born a human being is really precious, and we should not waste a moment of it. We could have been born so many other different things. We could have been born a wild animal that has to kill to survive and is always being hunted. Okay, but we weren't born that way. We were born with hands that can be kind, with minds that can think. Okay? So we really need to recognize and value our lives. Remember, in a few classes ago, we talked about how I'd gone to a conference in Atlanta. His Holiness was studying the concept of depression. And he had all the leading neuroscientists and psychiatrists and ethnobiologists, I mean, all the internationally renowned experts in the field talking about depression. And these mind science conferences are to ensure that the beliefs in Buddhism don't contradict science. Okay, because His Holiness says if anything in Buddhism can be proven not to be true, then we should stop believing it. So in this conference on depression, the experts brought up three qualities that were common to all depressed people. One is that they think that their life has no value. They feel isolated. And they feel like their suffering is never going to end. And some of the basic Buddhist beliefs that we've talked about earlier today and in previous classes is that, first of all, we have a precious human life. Your life is not meaningless. It's very valuable. It's a result, we believe, of some a lot of positive merit in past lives in order to be born human. So really value it. The quality of isolation, like we talked about earlier, interdependence. We are all dependent on one another. Nobody is someone who does not affect others. We all affect others and are affected by them. And what was the other one? Although suffering never ends. Impermanence. Nothing stays the same. No happiness, no suffering. It stays unchanged. Okay? Everything ends. Every suffering ends. So the good things end, which is why you need to keep striving to create new causes for happiness, okay? Instead of creating new causes for suffering, okay? All right. By the way, in each of these, it says, please bless me. Yeshua talks about, what does bless mean? We talk about, we say that word bless, bless, bless all the time, don't we? Well, I never really thought about what it meant. Bless is defined by Yeshua is, means to change in a positive way. So whenever you say, please bless me, it's, please help me to change in a positive way. All right. Next. Oh, this life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like a shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follow. That's the next thought to think about. And it's to remember how, you know, we just think, we all know intellectually we're going to die someday. But we don't really stop and think about how we are going to die one day, so what are we going to do in the time between now and that event? The Buddhists say, death is certain, the time of death is uncertain. It can happen at any minute. So why are we wasting time? Why are we not working right now to be our best selves, to try and be our happiest self, even if you don't believe in a next life? This one will be better for you, for sure. And if you do believe that the next life, there is a next life, and what happens in this one influences that, well, then you'll still be better off, won't you? But even if you don't, you're still going to be better off. So just, it's not a morbid way of thinking that life is going to end. It's a way of using it to motivate you to get your butt in action, okay? And this, finding firm and definite conviction in this, that means life will end. Please bless me always to be careful to abandon even the slightest negativities and accomplish all virtuous deeds. So that's a pretty high goal, but it's one we all can do with lots of work, right? Okay. All right. So here's another separate prayer. That other one was just the first four or so verses of a much longer one. This one is fantastic. Even if the environment and beings are filled with the fruits of negativity and unwished for sufferings pour down like rain, I seek your blessings to take these miserable conditions as a path by seeing them as causes to exhaust the results of my negative karma. All right, so say you something really terrible happened. You go out, you're driving, your brand new car gets smashed and you break your leg. Well, there's different attitudes you can have about that, right? You can say, man, this really stinks. This is terrible. I'm not going to ever go out again. People are terrible. You can have a whole negative mindset about it, okay? Or if you believe in cause and effect, if you believe in the Buddhist way of everything happens as a consequence of something that came before, so maybe something in a past life I did to have this thing happen to me. Well, aren't I glad that that ripened? Now I'm getting it out of the way, and now I can start working toward a positive mindset so that good things are going to start happening, either in this life or the next life. Okay? This next next one here is a continuation of the same prayer, and this is the part of the prayer that really is good. Unruly beings are as unlimited as space. They cannot possibly all be overcome. That's misspelled. However, if I overcome thoughts of anger alone, this will be equivalent to vanquishing all enemies. When I was a kid, my brother teased me all the time. My older brother mercilessly teased me all the time and would make me so mad, right? So I was always agitated when he was around. So I'd get so agitated, I'd want to make him just as mad. So I'd start calling him Dennis the Menace or some things that I thought were terrible. And he would say, doesn't bother me. So things he said to me really agitated me, made my life miserable, wanted me to say and do terrible things. But when I said it back to him, it didn't bother him a bit. He was just happy as a clam. How many times do we think about, that person did this to me, and then you're just spending all your time just thinking how you're going to have revenge and how terrible it was that person did that, and they're such a terrible person, and then you know your mind is just obsessed with all these negative things. You know, that person just merrily living their life, it's not bothering them. So who's it bothering, right? It's bothering yourself. So if you can overcome thoughts of anger alone, if that's all you can do, if that's all you do is just be able to overcome those negative thoughts, won't your life be a whole lot better? Here's a way of thinking about it. Where would I possibly find enough leather with which to cover the surface of the earth? Yet wearing leather just on the soles of my shoes is equivalent to covering the earth with it. There's no way that we can make everybody else in the world be a nice person and be nice to us, right? But if we can adjust our attitudes so that we can protect our mind and not be bothered by those things that all those not nice people do, if we can stay calm and peaceful and be a nice person, our whole lives are going to be nicer, not only inside, but we'll be nicer to other people, then other people will be nicer to us, right? So that's sort of what this means. Oh, this one here is one we read in a previous class. This is a really good thing to start your day with if you feel like you need it. A precious human life. This is by His Holiness. Every day, think as you wake up, today I'm fortunate to have woken up. I'm alive. I have a precious human life. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to use all my energies to develop myself, to expand my heart out to others, to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. I'm going to have kind thoughts toward others. I'm not going to get angry or think badly about others. I'm going to benefit others as much as I can. If we woke up every morning with that aspiration, don't you think that we'd start getting a little better at it? It's a really good way to start your day, isn't it? And here's what His Holiness is always saying. If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. One of our nuns told a story how years ago she was a social worker in the school, and she had been saving her money for this special pair of shoes that she really, really wanted. And just before she went to get those shoes for herself, she encountered a child who was really in need of some shoes. So instead of buying those shoes for herself, she used that money to get shoes for that child and their siblings. And she says, you know, over my lifetime, I must have bought hundreds of pairs of shoes, And I don't remember a single one of them except the ones that might be in my closet now. But I sure remember the day I bought the shoes for that child and how happy it made them. So, she could have made herself really happy by getting those shoes, right? But she made herself a lot happier for a lot longer time by having compassion for somebody else. And if we all look at our own lives and examples, this is a really good little mini meditation, you know, to think about and to think of ways in your day that you can do this. If it's a choice between, you know, being a little selfish, but it's okay. It's not to say that it's not okay to be selfish sometimes, because, you know, have practiced compassion means include yourself, right? But it also might help you to expand that out to others as well. And we all know this innately to be true. I love this one. This is also by His Holiness. Be kind whenever possible. It's always possible. Sometimes I don't remember that, but I try. Even when it's a really mean person, you could still be kind to them. One time in the newspaper, there was a little story. It was some country singer. And he said, it's amazing how beautiful life can be when somebody is kind to you. And haven't we all experienced that? And doesn't it give you a feeling of a wonderful power to know that just doing some little kind thing for someone can affect them in such a wonderful way? We are all really powerful people. It doesn't take much. Here is something that we talk about in Buddhism, the 8 worldly hopes and fears. Suffering, and in a previous class when we talked about suffering as one of those words that also suffered from translation, okay? I guess you got to prefer to use the word complications, okay? Complications in our life come from attachment to the qualities on the left and avoidance of qualities on the right. So we all want to work toward reward and we fear punishment. So the more we try work toward doing something with just the goal of reward in mind and the fear of punishment, it may often cloud our judgment, make our ethics fuzzy, okay? Might cause us to make some bad decisions, and bad meaning decisions that won't feel right to us. So the goal is then to try to live your life without excessive attachment to those things on the left, and without excessive fear of those things on the right. For example, we all know people who are, or read about people who are like whistleblowers, right? People who see something that is wrong, and even though they are fearful of punishment or criticism or bad reputation, they aren't excessively led by those fears, neither clearly are they seeking those attachments, right? Because if they really wanted to have fame or praise, they would not put themselves in jeopardy to do the right thing, right? So that's a common example, but in our everyday life, we have lesser opportunities for this. And I just put that up as something to think about, because I found this to be very helpful to myself when I'm trying to make decisions about doing something, whether I should or shouldn't do something. And the end is in sight. It's 8:20, and this is the end of this wonderful Buddhism in a Nutshell. And some of you have stuck it out for a lot of weeks, and I appreciate your attention. And if you want to learn more, if whatever you've heard in this class has motivated you to want to learn more, of course, like we mentioned, books by His Holiness the Dalai Lama are always good resources. But we have the Sunday teachings here at the Gadampa Center every Sunday at 10:30, Geshe Gelug. Usually it's Geshe Gelug, sometimes another senior teacher. But he really talks about very practical ways to help your everyday life. Whether you have no interest really in being a Buddhist or studying Buddhism, or if you've been a Buddhist for 30 years, there's still some inspiration and practical advice that you can get on Sunday mornings. And often he will actually ask for audience participation, and we learn from one another. It's really, really wonderful. Then Meditation 101, just as Buddhism in a Nutshell was a very, very brief introduction to the basics of Buddhism, Meditation 101, which is going to start next week, Scott?
Yes.
And Scott will be teaching Meditation 101 for 5 weeks. You'll learn the basics of meditation, okay, the very, very basics. Then if you feel like those have been good information and you want more, the next course is called Discovering Buddhism. That's a course that's usually offered on Monday nights. And it's a beginner class, but it's a little more in-depth than just the intro, Buddhism in a Nutshell and Meditation 101. And that they'll take one topic like the mind, karma, samsara, nirvana, and study just that one topic for 5 or 6 weeks. So it's a little more in-depth. And you get an opportunity that the people who teach that class are advanced practitioners, and they know their stuff a lot better than I do, so you get some better information. Okay, you can always check the website and calendars for visiting teachers and other opportunities. We sometimes have teachers, internationally renowned teachers, that come here to give different sets of teachings. We have retreats, many special things. In fact, at the end of April, Geshe Gelug is going to be teaching a weekend class on meditation, starting on Friday night and Saturday and Sunday. So check our website if you're interested in that. And then you can sign up for the listserv announcements. You just go on our website and get information about that. Are there any questions that I can answer for anybody about any question that you have? No? It's kind of overwhelming, isn't it? It's a lot of stuff to digest. But I hope it's been a helpful little brief touch into things. Let's see. Yes?
When we were talking about, is it the emptiness, the
yes.
wisdom of emptiness?
Yes.
I was thinking about that. Is that kind of like how our suffering is more based on how we perceive things rather than the existence of certain events?
That's an excellent interpretation. And a very useful one. That is certainly a component of it. We don't view things the way they really exist. So yes, the way we view it, we're viewing it through a certain, just, it's sort of like the blind man and the elephant, okay? The blind man at the tail thinks the elephant is a rope. The one at the leg thinks it's a tree. They're all a little bit right, but they don't know the whole thing. So, yes, that's a very helpful interpretation.
Cool. Thank you.
Any others? Okay. All right. So, here are some reliable resources in addition to books by His Holiness. The books, all of the books here in our bookstore have been validated as being authentic resources. So any of those books are good. The FPMT, the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition, that's this center is an FPMT center, which means that all of the teachings, the teachers, everything that goes on here has been accredited as being authentic Tibetan Buddhist teachings, okay? So that website, you can rely on the information that you get on that website. The Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archives website. Okay, remember I explained that Lama Yeshe is the first Buddhist monk in the 70s that taught Westerners about Buddhism, and he is the one that founded the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. So that's also an authentic website. Any books by the Dalai Lama and any books in our bookstore. And thank you. Let's dedicate all of this effort that we put into here. Let's dedicate it to the betterment of ourselves, our more peaceful hearts and minds, so that we can make the world a better place to be in. And I'd like to remind everybody that nothing that we do here at Kadampa Center is, we don't charge for anything at all. Everything that's here is out of the generosity of people that have come here. And 98% of everything that is done here, from sweeping the floors to hanging things to turning the lights on, is all done by volunteers. So until the bank mortgage and the power company will also just take things on a donation basis, we do have to ask for donations of money or time to help us if you are moved to do so. If you felt like there is something here of benefit to you and you'd like to give back in whatever way you can, whatever amount that you can, it's very much appreciated. And if you can't, that's all right too. Just send us a little aspiration or prayer, right? So thank you all so much for being here. If you have any questions, I will be here to help try and answer, okay? Good night, and thanks again, and be safe going home.